Hello and welcome to the Oldie News Round with Giles and Mary. Giles Wood, distinguished artist and Oldie columnist. Mary Killen, an Oldie contributor, Spectator's agony aunt, and author of What Would H.M. the Queen Do? And actually, it's the Queen we're going to begin with, because sadly you both couldn't make our Oldie of the Year lunch last week, but you might have seen that the Queen brilliantly turned down our invitation, saying, Her Majesty thinks you're only as old as you feel. And I want to talk about how to turn down an invitation and choose the right parties to go to. Giles, you both live in Wiltshire and you don't really like coming up to the smoke for parties, is that right?
Well, I've just been checking with a book given to me by the former editor of the Oldie. By the way, were you aware that you pronounce Oldie, Aldie, like the supermarket?
we're very pro-Oldie, so that's right.
Anyway, he gave me a book about quips and quotes, a journalist commonplace book. And in it is the cartoon of the British character by Pont. And it's got a man sitting in total darkness with his wife darning socks. And he's sitting deep in his armchair, and it's the British character disinclination to go anywhere. So I think that I'm rather proud of having that characteristics. And then there's another quote, ... those social summonses which call upon a man either to be bored or to lie, by Arthur Conan Doyle, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. So that's really a bit off message, but the point is, I think it's part of the British character.
And what is it you hate about parties, Giles?
No, can I interrupt?
All over Britain, there are men having rows with their wives, probably onto going to a dinner party in Balham, which is very difficult to get to. And when they get there, they might enjoy it, but it's the process of getting there that's so hard. It's getting them out of their armchairs, out of their rut, and into their next incarnation.
May I interrupt and say, most women want to go to the parties and then they've got this hurdle of the negative husband grumbling, saying, I don't want to go, I'd rather watch television. And that really spoils the party for the woman, because she has to put up with the grumbling for as many days as there are before the event occurs. And then the man walks in great form and everyone says, for example, oh, Giles was on great form, but Mary's a bit of a pain in the neck, isn't she? Because, of course, I'm exhausted by the arguing about going to the thing.
How do you explain this strange gender difference? Why is it the case men don't want to go and men and women do?
I think that women are the new hunter-gatherers, that women are the ones who go out into the world and bring back the useful information, the genuinely vital information. And then the man is the beneficiary of that without having to undergo the social interaction to get it.
And Mary, you love going to parties and you do a brilliant thing. You've told me about working off fellow guests at a party. What does that mean?
Well, it means if you're on the spectator...
Can I say that my mother finds that very offensive? That it always makes me laugh, but my mother doesn't like the idea of you working people off.
What I mean is, I learned many years ago from a former travel editor of the 1990s, who was the most popular man in London because he held the key to free trips abroad. He said he made more enemies at every party he went to than friends, because everyone was going towards him trying to get a commission, and he obviously couldn't process them all. And so he had to kind of not speak to certain people. So when I went to the spectator parties in the past, of course, pre-COVID, I used to stand on the doorstep because a lot of people were standing there smoking. And it meant that as people came into the party, they would stop and say hello to me, but they wouldn't want to stand for too long because they wanted to push on and get their drinks. And that way I was able to process or work off more people.
And there's another interesting principle which Giles Corran, the Times columnist, claims to have invented, and now Michael Gove claims it, which is when you're invited to a party 6 weeks ahead of it, don't immediately say yes or no. Think how you would feel on the night, half an hour before you have to get dressed and go out. You must have heard of this one. And where do you stand on that principle?
I think that's a very good that's a very good policy. I think Mary's very keen on answering straight away now. She's got is saying no straight away rather than shilly-shallying. I've just got another quote from Richard Ingrams, one of the most lugubrious of partygoers. And I don't know if we've got time. It's probably take about a minute before, just a minute for me to read.
Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
One of the worst ordeals for the non-drinker is having to sit through a dinner party with uncongenial company. You can see why your fellow guests get drunk, because it's the only way they can get through the evening. Drinks parties as one gets older are almost as bad because of the noise, which grows louder and louder the more drink is consumed. For me, one of life's greatest pleasures is slipping away, hopefully unnoticed, from such a gathering and escaping into the cool and silence of the night.
You agree with that, Giles? The thing is, Giles, you do occasionally spot, I occasionally spot you at parties, including occasionally oldie parties, and it's a great honour. What would qualify for a Giles Wood friendly party?
Well, I always enjoy the oldie parties.
To be honest, he always enjoys any party he goes to once he's there, don't you?
I do like finding like-minded people and people who are more intelligent than me. That's not difficult to find. but people who can... I'm looking for people who can increase my knowledge. I'm a knowledge-based person now. Someone who can tell me something I didn't know before.
I've not been
on social tittle-tattle.
And moving on to another issue, this weekend there's the big National Trust annual general meeting, and it's, fists are going to fly because there's this new group called Restore Trust, which wants to return the trust to what it used to be, a sort of straightforward place showing houses and landscapes as opposed to interpreting the properties, sometimes not very favourably. So there's a battle for the trust soul between the trendies and the fogies, you might say. Where do you stand on the best way to show houses and landscapes? Both of you, when you do accept invitations, go to some of Britain's grandest houses. What's
the best way to show them? This subject is a minefield, and Mary's written a big bubble here saying, "Be careful, what you say, because you might get into fall down a heffalump trap. Whatever you say, we don't know about this whether." It's the job of the National Trust to interpret, but we are, in general, we're not that keen on apologizing for things that happened in the past. I think that's common sense, because otherwise you'd have to apologize for cavemen who created pitfalls for mammoths to fall in, and you'd have to apologize for that as well. Where do you stop apologizing? And the other thing is, I'm very keen on the National Trust maintaining these houses, but you don't have to read all the blurb, all the politically correct stuff. You can just ignore it, as with the rest of life.
More generally, Mary, without talking about the trust specifically, when you go to large houses, what is the thing you most like about the beauty of them? What do you most appreciate about them?
I like being in a house with the correct spaces, which are designed to make you feel better physically. Do you remember Winston Churchill said, "We build buildings and afterwards they build us"? You know, you actually feel it can be therapeutic to be in a beautiful house with the right views through the window, the right materials, wood and tapestry and that sort of thing. And so it's quite nice to fantasize as well. And I think a lot of the trust audience are hyacinth buckets who want a nice day out. They don't want to be lectured while they're there.
They want to escape from, National Trust House is a form of escapism. So you don't really want to engage in politics when you go there. Mm-hmm. That's for school children. It's not for adults.
Yeah, it's not for adults. But I'll just tell you a brief anecdote, Harry, which was, about 30 years ago, we were staying in Castle Townsend in Cork in a house party, and we all decided we'd like to go to Bantry House, which is an Irish stately home. So we set off, and the days before the internet, we couldn't find out if it was open or not. Three quarters of the way there, we stopped to fill up with petrol And the garage owner said, a woman garage owner, said, "Ah, no, it's always shot on a Thursday. Are you very disappointed?" And we said, "Oh, that's a shame. Never mind, we'll turn back." And she said, "If you want to look round a house, you could look round my own house. It's just next door."
Very good.
And I thought that was great. We all went round it and gave her some money. And it's really satisfying curiosity and nosiness, isn't it? And I think more members of the public, if it weren't for health and safety, should open their own houses up for nosy parkers to come and look round.
There'd be health and safety issues with our own cottage, Mary.
Yeah.
No, and it reminds me of our friend, the late, great Hugh Massingbird, saying about great big gentlemen's clubs in London, but those great palaces, he said, you walk taller in those huge rooms with those very high ceilings. They make you, fill you with joy. And moving on to our last subject, which is...
Hang on, can I just interrupt, Harry? Just to say that the other job of the National Trust is to look after landscapes, and that's even more contentious because of the right wing of the Tory party wanting to do rewilding and bring back beavers. And there's a very fashionable thing in the Lake District, which is to wanting to get rid of sheep. So I know that Rory Stewart is very keen on getting sheep back. There's this fashionable thing, fashionable word called sheep-wrecked. Landscapes that have been sheep-wrecked are where there are too many sheep nibbling away, preventing reforestation, preventing plants like juniper from establishing because of their tiny little mouths nibbling away like so many
lawnmowers.
And so there's a battle for landscapes as well between traditional farming and those people who have read George Monbiot's book Feral, in which he uses this word sheep-wrecked to point out that there are far too many sheep uplands. And ours is possibly the only country where the uplands look like a sort of billiard table because they've been shorn of trees by sheep. Other countries in Europe have many more trees in the uplands.
Nutty, can I wind you up and ask you to say what side is Rory Stewart on?
He's on the traditional side.
Of the sheep.
And he doesn't like this word rewilding.
No, but does he want sheep?
He wants sheep. He wants the traditional management, whereas there's the other people, there's the other factor that wants to have natural regeneration, which is caused by having less sheep, less grazing, and more.
And Giles, are you pro-sheep or anti-sheep?
I have been infected by this word sheep-wrecked. It's gone firmly into my head. And I'm now looking at a lot of landscapes in Wales, which are virtually wildlife deserts, and looking at too many sheep in Scotland. The trees can't get hold, and especially at a time when we need a lot of tree cover. But I think I'm droning on a bit.
Well, let's move on to our last topic, which is how to build the perfect fire. Giles, in your brilliant column in the New Oldie, you discuss you've been building this brilliant log shed, but Mary, you disapprove of it. Can you explain that row? And also, can you also give your tips for how to build the perfect fire, please?
Do I disapprove of the log shed? Do I, Nutty? Or is it just that you spend too long in it?
Start to put lots of your old books and magazines in the log shed.
Oh, yes.
As a halfway house when I can't decide what to do with them. The problem for many years is that, as I say in my column, is that all I was doing was drying wet wood. And this is a problem for many people is they can't get hold of dry wood. There's a lot of talk about kiln-dried wood. We've just paid a huge amount of money to import some kiln-dried wood, which immediately you have to keep in a dry place. And what you really need is lots of sheds and outhouses. So all these people moving to the country need lots of sheds to put firewood in. Firewood is becoming quite a good thing to own a wood and be able to get your own firewood as every energy source is going up in price. So suddenly I think owning a woodland might become a profitable venture and using it to sustainably gather firewood. That means you chop the tree down and it grows back up again. Coppicing and pollarding are processes by which you maintain the tree but get firewood as a byproduct. The problem was that I wasn't letting it dry.
So
all our guests were said they were looking forward to the hissing noise, the reassuring hissing noise coming from the fire instead of the clean burn, which is favoured by today's...
which you get if you buy it from a wood merchant.
Yes, so I'm now drying my wood, my homegrown logs, round the edge of the imported logs.
Yes.
But you have to deal with the Greta Thunberg paradox, don't you? That here's a very, very natural way to provide energy, but now some people take against the whatever the pollution caused by the fire, wood fire.
Yes, well, I think in London, wood fires are definitely should be banned. It's absolutely absurd, the idea that you can have a wood fire in London, a log burner in London.
Why should you country folk be allowed one?
I think because I think there's more space and it's more logical because it should be a cheap and plentiful supply of wood. I think we are carbon neutral. Someone said that they cut so much of the Amazon down now, Nati, I was watching a report, that it's now a net carbon producer rather than an absorber of carbon.
Yeah.
So what I think we need is for Boris is to set off in a task force to invade Brazil and get Bolsonaro out. And that would be his Thatcher moment, just as Thatcher sent a task force to the Falklands. I think Boris should send one to Brazil and restore the Amazon. That's the most important thing. We've gone off topic.
In fact, didn't Boris's brother-in-law give you some tips on how to produce the perfect fire?
Yes, he was very good about pointing out that I was using wet logs and that they were hissing and there was no comfort or cheer from my fires. And he pointed out the importance of letting logs dry for two seasons at least. There's a poem by Lady Congreve called Logs to Burn,
yeah,
which is an old traditional poem which says how long each log needs to dry and the different merits of the different types of wood on which, but you should never burn softwoods. Don't burn Leylandii or Scots pine because they'll produce tar in your chimney. And it's very sad when the little old ladies install a log burner and then they go to their garage and buy some wet pine logs, which surprisingly won't ignite. So that's a problem. Don't buy wet logs from garages.
And Mary, where do you stand on this issue? You quite often feature unfavorably in Giles's columns, him saying you disapprove of his gardening activities, but this is a good byproduct of his garden activities, which is the huge amount of wood that's produced.
Homegrown logs.
Yes.
It should be a good thing.
Well, I like the homegrown logs, but the trouble is it's a disproportionate amount of time and I feel he should be painting. Could you hold on a second? The postman's at the door.
So sorry, we had an interruption from your Thatcher. Is that right, Mary?
Yes, that's right. Yes. You know, part if you read the small print of your house insurance, it says unless you have it checked every 8 years, then if the house burns down, they won't pay you.
I've got for Richard Ingram's next book of quotations, Mary, I've got a very good one about Thatchers, which is from our own Thatchers. His own words were, Thatchers don't live in thatched houses.
That's an extremely good point, I think, on which to end this very enjoyable episode of the Oldie News Round with Giles and Mary, Giles Wood and Mary Killen. Thank you so much.
Goodbye.